This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth, back from vacation land.
Yes, welcome back, Drew.
Hey, Tommaso, you guys did a great job last week with Niall. He's always fascinating to listen to.
Yeah, and he had an accent, and we have another guy with an accent tonight.
But why, Niall's...
He's Irish.
Is he from Ireland?
Well, he's got a great Irish. He's got a little bit of an Irish.
Yes, you know, he does. But he's born and raised, I believe, in Maryland, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I think he it's in his blood.
All right. So, it's easy. You can interview all kinds of portfolio managers and things, but we try to look for unique things.
Yeah.
So, and that's tonight we're going to do a unique concept that we're going to be talking about tonight. And... I might as well just turn it over to you and let you tell everyone who we're talking to tonight.
Yeah, well, we've got from across the pond, we've got Paul Wood, Water Fund Managing Director. And, Paul, you out there?
Yes, good evening.
All right, so you can see his little accent there with Paul. You can kind of hear it. But, Paul, I guess you're originally from the UK, graduated from Cambridge, you're also fluent in French, and you do Arabic and Farsi languages. And you've spent a lot of time over in Dubai, really coming out of London. And I guess you're in London now, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay,
I've traveled around a bit, but now I'm back in my home territory.
Yeah, so you're a little bit of a night owl. It's 11 o'clock over there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, so, we're going to talk to you a little bit tonight about this water fund and your water cost index and all the things that you and Scott have worked on over the years, and we're excited to have you on board. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, it's good to be here, too.
So, Paul, tell me, why water? Why water? Why not oil? Why not gold? Why not corn? Why water? Seems like there's but you should have been in Baltimore last night, Paul. You would not be talking about water as an investment. We had more water than we could ever want.
Well, in Baltimore, we'd be lucky. We're a company, Water Fund, and we started off from a premise that there's a great need, an opportunity for private capital investment in water supply infrastructure. Because the way we view it is, but the more that private capital can become incentivized to enter the water supply sector, we can unlock not only a new and exciting opportunity for investors, but we also have a nice virtuous effect of ensuring that appropriate investment is being channeled into the safe and reliable supply of what is, after all, our most vital resource for all our lives to flourish. But one of the issues that we've identified is that opportunity and those incentives for private capital have been very much limited for investors. And what we've seen over the last couple of years, and a few guys in the U.S., particularly you've seen in California and Texas, that there have been, water has now been, and its scarcity, have been hitting the headlines, which is quite unusual for water, which is usually... a resource that pretty much keeps below the parapet as far as news stories go. Not seen as particularly exciting.
Now, with California, that's still true, but Texas has sort of replenished, hasn't it? Or at least East Side Texas has.
They have received some rain, which has alleviated the problems that they were experiencing a couple of years back. But the essential issue, you have these situations, as we've seen from the water supply crises in California and Texas, of water scarcity. And, of course, that's usually an event that's triggered by an environmental or climatic effect, such as drought. But that climatic event is really merely exposing, just to an extreme extent, what is a more fundamental problem, and which still hasn't been eliminated, even though you may have alleviation of the immediate problem, which is the drought. It hasn't alleviated one of the fundamental underlying problems, which surrounds water supply cost and risk. And what I mean by that is that the scarcity value of the resource is not being sufficiently taken into consideration. And it's the way that we've been allocating the resource without reference to that scarcity value that is the real problem.
So what you're referring to is that we haven't charged enough for it in the past.
Yes, essentially. And because of those mismatches in terms of who has rights over water, what people pay for water, the way that the water is sold and structured and owned currently, is not the most efficient way
so
we can allocate that resource.
So tell us, who owns it and who allocates it typically?
Well, typically, both in the U.S. and, of course, globally, water is usually a state-owned asset. It's managed and owned by typically governments or municipalities.
So that's a big surprise, then, that government isn't allocating it properly, isn't it?
Yes, it's something that we think that with the introduction of more private sector capital and creating the necessary incentives for that, we're more likely to get a more efficient outcome.
So as I come up to this first end of the first part of our show, that's what you guys are doing in a lot of you're talking about private investment in water. That's what Water Fund is all about.
Yeah, and establishing what the value of that water is, the cost of delivering that water, so we can then put a more efficient way for allocating that value, and exploring the opportunities that are available.
Okay, now you got to hold on with me, Paul, because we've got the fundamentals down of why water and what you're doing to some degree. When we come back, we're going to go into more detail about what you're doing and compare that to what other opportunities there are and so forth. So hold on with me. We're going to take this pause for traffic. Take it away, traffic. We'll be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel all right.
I think she did that for Paul being British.
I think so.
She
knows you like the
Beatles.
She's
not even taking credit for it, you know?
We're trying to find a connection.
Water, rain. Remember, see Anita?
Rained hard.
And you got 15 minutes.
Last night.
Right, there you go.
Hard last night. So.
Anyway, we're here with Paul Wood, and he's a director with Water Fund, and we're talking about water as an investment. Your president and CEO, Scott Rickards, is a graduate of our illustrious university,
right.
Johns Hopkins University. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, yes.
And does he still live in the area?
No, currently he lives in Connecticut and Montreal.
Well, we won't hold that against him.
and he doesn't have any water problems.
Hopefully, if he's living in Connecticut, he's at least not a Patriot fan. Tell us that much, at least, Paul.
Okay.
All that matters to you is what football team does he root for, and you mean that in soccer-type football.
That's right.
You know?
We're football with our feet.
The real football. So.
The real football. I was just in Florida last week with my good friend Jim Cowan from Newcastle, England, and he gives me the same hard time. Which football are you talking about,
mm-hmm,
Drew?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Paul, we're talking about water as an investment, and a lot of people think that you can go, well, why do I need to, we're going to talk about what you guys do, but a lot of people say, I can just go on the market and I can buy an ETF. A water ETF, a global water ETF, and so forth, and think that they have a water investment, but what you're doing is dramatically different. So just tell us first, what is an ETF typically all about in the stock market that says water in it?
Well, typically, it's not actually investing. Like, for example, if you took an ETF in gold or an ETF in oil, you're able to invest directly in the price trends of that particular commodity. That's not actually available for water because, of course, water currently isn't traded internationally or in a similar way to those commodities. And so an ETF is usually structured through positions in stocks that have some sort of indirect exposure to water. So it may be listed utilities, the very few that actually are listed, or it could be through equities in suppliers to water companies, such as a large engineering group. So in that sense, you're not getting an actual exposure to, as I mentioned earlier, the value you could get from perhaps exposure to the scarcity value of water, which is what we're interested in.
Yeah, you know, Tom and I were looking at one ETF, and they had in there Danaher.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Danaher is a giant industrial conglomerate that does all kinds of things. But one of the companies they own is Pall Corporation, P-A-L-L, which does water filtration. And I guess that's why it was in the index. But it can't be more than 5% of their entire revenue or so forth.
The correlation with water is got to be fairly low. Yeah,
So you have a water index. Now, when most of our investment listeners hear the term index, they think of stock indexes and so forth that's dealing with water and so forth. Your index is very different. So tell us what your water index is all about.
Yeah, sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, water has typically been a state-managed and owned resource, both from the source, whether it be the river or the reservoir, right through to the infrastructure that supplies that water. So it's because of that largely state-dominated ownership, it's allowed little opportunity for investors to enter. Information on the costs that have been associated with delivering that resource are also very often opaque and unclear. So even where there are opportunities for investment, it's difficult for investors to calculate the financial risks involved that are directly related to actually supplying water. So utilities are essentially left in a situation where they struggle to attract capital because they're not transparent enough. And investors are frustrated because the appropriate level of risk analysis to make informed decisions is just not there. So what we've done is we developed, along with our technical partners, IBM, what we call the Water Cost Index, or the WCI as we abbreviate it. And that essentially takes all the financial and key operational data that gets is involved in delivering water to a particular city or region or country. And from that, we then calculate a number in dollars a cubic meter for the cost of delivering water to that particular region or city. And that is the number that we call an index. So for each city, whether it be, say, for example, Fresno or Los Angeles or New York City or Singapore, we can apply a value based on the data that we take and that we crunch on our data analytics platform to provide a number through which you can then do a lot of more risk analysis and calculate the cost of delivery.
So give us a couple of cities that you have a cost index on. What's it cost to deliver water in San Francisco?
Well, currently we have, for example, Fresno and Southern California. We also have places like Singapore, London, and those costs can deliver quite widely because, for example, in somewhere like Fresno, where there may be issues related to drought, the cost can reach quite high, somewhere maybe north of $2 a cubic meter, whereas in somewhere where the water is more abundant, you're going to get a lower cost. And because there's not actually necessarily a benefit in comparing water cost across continents because, as I mentioned earlier, water is not yet a fungible commodity that works in that way, similar to, say, oil, for example.
So, Paul, I was looking at your index online here, and, so help me reconcile some of these things. So, it says San Diego, at least the one I printed out, had a $3.02 water cost index, U.S. dollars, and Sacramento was 65 cents. That disparity doesn't seem to make sense to me. Why would that be so different?
Well, it all involves the way that water gets delivered to cities. So, for example, like San Diego, in Southern California, greatly hit by drought. You have costs involved, extra things like desalination, for example, that may have resorted to, which are far more costly than, for example, a city like Sacramento, which may be able to rely more or have more reservoir reserves that maybe San Diego is able to draw on. So it's all about that cost of delivery can be quite different between different cities because, as I say, even within the same state, there's not necessarily a connection between different water systems there are not hubs around which water trades in a similar way to other commodities. So it can be quite unique costs, even if those locations are not necessarily too distant.
So when you said $3.02, is that per gallon, per bathtub?
Cubic meter, I think? Is it?
Yeah, we measure it in cubic meters, and the index can actually provide it in you know, whichever unit the user is comfortable in.
Can you hold a cubic meter of water?
In what?
I guess it... what's that?
1,000 liters. It's roughly about 1,000 liters. I'm not quite sure that is an imperial.
So what does so give us an idea? Like in San Diego, $3.02 cubic meter. How much money would the city of San Diego typically charge the average person for that same cubic liter? Would they charge them 10 cents, or would they charge them a buck, or would they charge them $5?
I'm not actually aware of what the current charge is, particularly in San Diego. But one of the things I can tell you is that, as was pointed out by the American Society of Civil Engineers, up to 80% of U.S. municipalities now are losing money on those their water delivery.
Losing water at the rate of 10%, 50%?
No, it can be. It can vary in terms of what cost recovery they achieve. But as I said, 80% of water utilities in the U.S. right now are failing to recover costs, and that's a serious issue in terms of, because one of the ironies is that whereas in San Francisco you have obviously one of the world's leading technological hubs, that includes many technologies being developed specifically for water, many fantastic technologies in terms of efficiency, energy efficiency. But the irony is that the utilities in that same state are not able to recover the cost that it's costing them to deliver water, and therefore they can't actually afford these technologies. So there's a kind of disparity, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to, enable the index to be able to make water decision making more efficient. It shows not only because what it can do for the utility, they can use our index and analytical tools to realize the impact on water delivery costs of a whole range of factors. From technology costs to climatic conditions to capital spending. And that can enable them to more efficiently manage how they do plan things like tariffs and infrastructure. Because tariffs are often caught up in political discussion. They can be at the whim of local councils, which often are more concerned with just keeping the cost down rather than necessarily having it reflect what it actually costs to deliver water.
All right, Paul, hold on a sec. I got down to my traffic time here. I got to take a pause. But when we come back, you finish that thought, and I got a bunch of other questions, especially how do you help us invest in water? But right now, we got to take a traffic break. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Is that water or rain or anything to do with water? That is? What is it? Another. Okay. Well, thank you, Anita. We're here with Paul Wood, and we're talking about water as an investment. And, we were wondering, Paul, just general concept Tom and I were talking about at the break is, that we deal with a lot of infrastructure to move natural gas and oil and all kinds of commodities throughout the country, but we don't ever really use pipelines to move water to places that need them in our country. Is that more common in other places of the world?
Yes, water is very much worldwide a local commodity, so as I mentioned before the break, even within the same state or the same country, you can often find disparities because here in the UK, for example, we have it's regional monopolies that supply the water. In most other countries, it's usually a municipality that is taking charge of that or owns the infrastructure. So there's very little link between even next-door neighbour cities in terms of their water. So in terms of transferring, there's very little infrastructure to connect different locations. And then price discovery is not very well developed. So it's difficult to do these kinds of transfers.
So let's talk about your investment opportunity that you offer, and your website, if I've got it correctly, is World's Water Fund. Why don't you tell us?
worldswaterfund.com, and on there we have more information about what we do and the sorts of investment opportunities that we offer in the water space through the analytical tools that we've developed.
Okay, but you have a thing called Blue Bonds, right?
That's right. So as I mentioned earlier, we've opened up through our index risk analysis for water. And that's allowed us to develop several innovative products, financial products. One of those is a debt instrument for water supply projects, which we call Blue Bonds, and we offer those to investors. That can be invested for as little as $1,000. You can sign up on our website for the various projects we have.
Okay, so let's just kind of walk that out real quick, okay? So somebody gives you $1,000, what are they going to get? What do they choose? What are they going to get?
Well, we essentially have a portfolio of projects for supplying water, and the money comes in the form of a debt. Will go in the form of a debt instrument to financing a particular infrastructure project.
So it'd be like a bond, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you will receive a yield for that. We also do instruments that involve some preferred equity, maybe in the project.
So you get a guaranteed fixed interest rate, or do you get a variable interest rate first?
The way we structure it and the way our index works is you can have we do fixed interest rates, but what our index does is it can actually also connect that yield for those with risk appetite to the actual pattern in the cost of water. So, for example, if you're investing a bond in a water supplier whose cost of water goes up, then that obviously would affect the yield could stand to go up because to compensate for the fact that the cost has gone up.
So let me just make sure I understand that. So do I get a fixed interest rate plus some kind of bonus if the cost of water goes up, or do I just get a interest rate depending upon how the cost of water goes up?
Yeah, the first of those, what we do is we can use our index as a benchmark, as a kind of floating to set up. So we'd have a ceiling, a floor fixed rate, say for example 5%, and then you can stand to gain on top of that in case that the cost of water goes up for the particular project in which you are investing.
So wait a minute now, was 5% what your initial interest rate is on the water investment?
Yes, I mean, you may that's probably considerably higher than the rates that we've been used to in the low interest rate environment we've been experiencing the last few years. But that's very much because our philosophy is that the investor should very much be rewarded for the risk they're taking. And what our tool does, because the blue bonds are very much linked to our index and how the index performs, and what the index does is it reveals the actual risk that the investor is taking, because we're taking into account all the costs that the water supplier that you're investing in has to deal with in order to supply their service. And therefore, we feel that by measuring that cost effectively and measuring it properly, then we have to reflect the real cost risk of actually investing in that particular business.
Now, what's the maximum somebody can put into it? 1,000 is the minimum. What's the maximum?
Well, we have quite a rich pipeline of projects, so we have some, upwards of several million dollars. So, there's quite a range of possibilities that we have within our portfolio.
So would this debt, this bond that they would be buying, would this be registered with the SEC?
Well, some of them are done through, in non-U.S. Locations. So they would be linked to, we would set up various vehicles, not necessarily U.S., but yes, we can register those which were done within the U.S.
So, I mean, like in the U.S., when you buy an investment in the U.S. and when you offer an investment in the U.S. to be purchased, typically they have to be registered with the SEC unless they're for accredited investors only.
Yes, I mean, we have a system, we have employed the full, and we fully comply with the, you know, in terms of the, but when we solicit for the investments and advertise, these are done in full compliance with the regulations currently in force.
So
in terms of the investor vetting and so on, we have a company that we employ to do that.
So are these bonds held in a brokerage account of some sort while they're, I mean, where's the bond held? Where's the custody of the bond? Who oversees that you deliver your side and the client, you know, has their, you know, asset monitored properly and so forth?
Yes, we maintain a series of escrow accounts, you know, I'd say through the various service providers that we use, you know, the auxiliary services. That's related to that. So everything is overseen by them as a third party, and we, you know, we comply with all that various regulation.
But it's not held at like a Schwab or a TD Ameritrade. It's held in name, you know, with you know, Waterfund LLC or something like that.
Yes, that's right. We have various vehicles through which that's done.
So, you know, just for our own purposes, because we are registered investment advisors, mm-hmm. we have to give a disclosure now. And
right,
that disclosure is that we have not invested in any blue bonds. We're
right.
not soliciting. We're not suggesting that anybody do it.
Right.
We're just bringing this as information to our listeners about something that we found that we thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And we figured, you know, hey, let's interview these people. At the same time, we'll be learning
that's
about
right.
it as our listeners have.
That's right.
But we're certainly not, you know, here standing here recommending this in any way, shape, or form. We're just educating as to the situation, what it is, and we're learning ourselves
yeah.
right now as
the
we
opportunities
go,
out
as,
there sure.
as we go along. So,
yeah.
So your guaranteed fixed interest rate. Oh man, time flies when I'm having fun. So you got to hold on with me, Paul. I'm at that 6:44, 11:44 for you. Are you still awake?
Yeah, I'm still holding on here.
Are you
Hang
laying
on.
In bed right now, waiting for this interview to end?
Nah, never. My wife's still waiting.
All right, we got to take a traffic pause, and we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
See, now I know that Noah trained Anita.
All right.
Anyway, we're here with Paul Wood. We're talking about worldswaterfund.com. That's the... website of mm-hmm. their company, and they do water cost analysis, and they also help investors to actually participate in mm-hmm. the actual investment of water by lending money. At least one way to do it is lending money through these blue bonds. They
right.
give you a fixed interest rate back on your money and maybe some variable rates of return depending on different ways that you could structure the bond. So, Paul, an investor gives you some money. They get a bond. They get a fixed interest rate. Now, you guys have the money. What are you doing? Are you building a reservoir? Are you building a desalination plant? Are you building a water treatment facility? Are you privatizing a government facility and running it yourselves? What are you doing with the money?
Well, typically what we do is we have our portfolio is largely consisting of what's called industrial water projects. So these are, as opposed to, say, municipal supply of water, which is supplying water to residents. Our projects are typically bilateral arrangements whereby we and a partner who has expertise in the engineering side will supply water to an industrial user who may be conducting an activity in a location that can't normally be reached by a conventional municipal water supply, so he needs a separate, private and independent water supply. And we will negotiate bilaterally with that off-taker a price for delivering that water. And this is what and building that infrastructure to supply those kinds of users is what forms the key.
So how much money have you invested so far? How much has your team invested so far?
Well, right now we're investing in some assets in the Middle East, in the Gulf.
That's a pretty dry area.
Yeah, they need a lot of water out there. They use it
in a big way. I was in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, and I mean, it's amazing how much water they run through. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But it's going back to what we were talking about earlier, in that, you know, actually Dubai probably has one of the highest costs of water in the world, but it delivers it at a very cheap and subsidized price. So getting into the municipal supply of water is not an opportunity that's open to investment right now. So as I say, we typically invest in these industrial facilities. So, for example, oil companies that need to recycle water for injection into oil wells for enhanced oil recovery, they need a solution to supply water out in the desert. And we do that through things like reverse osmosis of brackish water and technologies like that.
So you have, how long you've been doing this? I mean, is this the first 6 months, or is this the first 6 years, or what?
Well, we're quite a new company. We've been around. I mean, Water Fund has been around now for about 2.5 years, for which we've developed our risk analysis tools. But we've been into the investment side of things and developing that for around about the last 6 months or so, the last 6 to 12 months.
So it's a relatively new concept. Now, you've borrowed this money from investors. You're borrowing money from investors, and you're putting it into these water facilities, okay? So who owns the things that you're investing in? So a bond investor is lending money to an equity investor. Who owns the equity in these deals?
Well, what we can do is, again, it depends on the structure. We can actually ensure that the part of the kicker, so to speak, for the bond investor is actually structured not so much as a bond, so much as preferred equity. So it can actually be the investors themselves who can take a part equity. Water Fund will also own some of that equity, as well as our partner, the technical partner. So it's a mixture of those three elements.
Now, Tom noticed that in your information, you talk about a prospectus, which every American investor, if they were investing in a deal like this, should get a prospectus before they invest. Is there a prospectus online people can look at before they invest?
I don't think we currently don't have the particular projects online, but we through our website, you can make an inquiry for us, and we can then supply you with the details. Or our servicing and compliance partner can supply you with those.
Now, the United States recently opened up a new investment opportunity called crowdsourcing, where people can put, a small sum of money, $1,000 to $10,000, into a project, without having to be registered, but you can't exceed a certain amount of money. Are you doing that, or are you doing a outright bond investment?
Yes, ours is more of the latter. We haven't really done the crowd. It's not so much a crowdsourcing product. It's a product that's offered through channels in compliance with the typical sort of bond.
So, Paul, who's your typical investor?
Well, we've had a mixture. Various private investors who come to us through our service providers who solicit investments for us on our behalf, a mixture of high net worth individuals, some of our own equity holders in Water Fund itself who initially did their equity in us because they wanted to follow the water story and are interested in these types of investments and realizing value from them.
Now, I've noticed that China is a real crisis in water to some degree, but you don't seem to have any focus at this time on China, or do you?
We do have, we actually have quite good connections in China, and we have been offered some opportunities there. We're not currently pursuing any right now. It's often a difficult environment to operate in, and one that requires a great deal of understanding. So you know, we prefer to stick with places initially that we are more familiar with. As you mentioned, yes, China is indeed a place where there is indeed a major water crisis in terms of getting the water from where it's actually located to the places where it's actually needed.
Now,
an area we'll be keeping an eye on.
Desalination is a pretty interesting concept, but it's very expensive, isn't it?
Yes, certainly on the larger scale. What we're doing, as I mentioned, in Leeds, is called reverse osmosis. That's a technology that allows you to produce it at relatively a lot lower cost.
How does that work?
Well, reverse osmosis is done through membranes. So you take, for example, seawater or seawater reverse osmosis, or you can use brackish water, which lies under the ground, and you essentially just put it through membranes, which are contained in a sort of container, and then it filters it through the membrane. It filters out all the elements that aren't needed, and it leaves you with the pure water.
Wow.
I have one of those in my home, actually, but it's a very slow process. At least the one I have is a very slow process of producing water, and then you have to ultimately have an ultraviolet light because of the bacterial buildup you might have of a tank. Is that the same thing that you see in an industrial application, or is it different from the residential?
It's a similar concept, but on the industrial level, it's obviously on a larger scale,
mm-hmm.
But it's not too dissimilar. But it's a relatively quick process. For example, you can through one unit, which is roughly the size of say a porter cabin, you're getting about 2,000 cubic meters a day of water.
So, Paul, believe it or not, we are basically out of time. But we want before we finish, we want to give your website out again. It's worldswaterfund.com, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
World's Water Fund, so that's plural, worldswaterfund.com. And you can learn more about some of the topics we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, what a pleasure. I mean, time flies when we do a good interview and we have a great, interesting topic, one that I've never heard about. So
right.
I really appreciate you sharing with us how this is operating.
And it's been a great pleasure to talk to you guys as well.
And it does sound like an interesting opportunity, but as a full disclosure, we are not in at this point in time. We are just exploring as our listeners were
That's
at this
right.
moment.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Paul, we appreciate your time. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.